Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
So we're reciting the verses, starting with 325, Lord Kapila said to Devahuti. So, Yasamba Sangha Mama Virya Samvido Bhavanti Hrit Karana Rasana Kata Tadyoshi Sanasvava Pargavartmani Shraddha Ratir Bhaktir Anukramashati. Tajaro Mula Nisha Janina Nayam Deo Deha Bhajan Niyoke Kastan Karman Ahate Vidbhujanye Japo Divyam Puchakayena Satvam Sujet Tasmai Brahma Sokyam Tanantam. Okay, so this morning we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 4th Canto, Chapter 16, text number 2. Today's verse is about Prithu Maharaj, so let's talk a little bit about him first, get familiar with him, before we read some of his glories, which the verse is going to be about. So you've just finished studying about Dhruva Maharaj. Dhruva Maharaj went back to Godhead. And then the Bhagavatam, as its usual method of progression is that they discuss the descendants of Dhruva Maharaj. Among those descendants was one king. His name was Anga. And he was a relatively pious king. But somehow or another, he had a very bad son. Anybody know what his son's name was? Vaina, yeah. What did Vaina do? I mean, that made him so bad? Yeah, he'd be playing with his small boys and he would kill them, you know. A very despicable character. And so his father tried to correct him in many ways. Maharaj Anga tried to correct him in many ways. He couldn't do that. And so finally, he just became disgusted and he just left. One night, he just left the kingdom. He just left his home. And after that, Vaina became the king. Now, what kind of king do you think Vaina was? cruel, but he was efficient. Also, rogues and rascals and thieves and everything like that were very afraid of him. So therefore, they went into hiding, and therefore there wasn't that disturbance in society. How did he overstep his bounds? Generally, that's how people, kings, overstep their bounds. They think that they're proud and they don't need the brahmanas, and so they stop sacrifice. I think indeed Vena said that I'm, you know, God, and you should worship me. So ultimately, the Brahmins became disturbed by that, and then they executed the role. And it's interesting, the role of the Kshatriyas and the Brahmins here. The Brahmins didn't immediately throw Vena out, although his character was obviously not the best. But when he overstepped his bounds, then they came together and they felt that it was their responsibility to society at large to do something about the king. So they cursed him and he died. Now, out of his body, it's an interesting process there. It describes in the Bhagavad-gita. They churned his limbs. And out of that churning of his limbs, I don't know exactly what that means. Churn. Genetic engineering. they churned his limbs, and out of his body came two personalities. Who are they? Marajprithu and Archie, his queen. And so who Marajprithu is. And he was known for some things. I don't know if you have control of this board. Can you put verse 4:21:20 up there just for a minute? 4:21:20. Marajprithu had many good qualities, and he's actually an incarnation of the personality of Godhead. I believe he's a Shaktivesh avatar. Shaktivesh avatar means? Empowered Jiva. And what was the specific power that he had, Marajprithu? Administration, yes. Ruling, the king. He exemplified, he personified that power of the Lord for ruling over. And so he's very famous in that way. But there are many qualifications that he had, and this is one I wanted to just point out. Marajprithu's speech was very beautiful, full of metaphoric language, clearly understandable and very pleasing to hear. His words were all grave and certain. It appears that when he spoke, he expressed his personal realization of the absolute truth in order to benefit all who were present. This is a quality that Marajprithu displayed. And I mean, why is speech so important? Just, you know, we don't want to spend too much time because we want to get to the verse today, but why is speech, this quality of speech, so important? Yeah, well, Prabhupada says in the Bhagavad Gita, yes, that you can tell the quality of a man when he speaks. A fool may remain silent, but as soon as he speaks, you know, this person's just a fool. And so speech is very indicative of our consciousness, in other words. So yes, that's important. Also, there are many, many instructions in Bhagavad Gita and elsewhere. Actually, I did a little research on this last night. There's a whole slideshow some devotees have put together, 43 slides talking about speech, all from the Shastras. And many of them refer to how speech can be misused. Abusive speech, harsh speech. These things are influences of lower modes of nature, and they are to be avoided. But obviously, when Marajprithu spoke, there was nothing like that, and this is some of his qualities, his speech. Just quickly, he was also very expert at receiving saintly persons. In his power of ruling, he got angry at the earth because she wasn't producing nourishment for the citizens, and he caused her to produce in that way. And one last thing that's special about Marajprithu. Anybody want to take a guess at what it is? No, it doesn't have to do with his ruling power so much anymore, his devotional. For producing the earth. But Marjpritu is known as one of the nine personalities that personify different stages of devotional service. He's famous for that. Anybody know? Archanam, right. Worship of the deity. Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam, Archanam, Padasevanam, Dasyam, Sakyam, Atmani, Vedanam. So Archanam, Marjpritu, personified that stage. But he was a king. It's not that he did the puja, but he used all the resources of his kingdom to establish deity worship. And so he's known as that. Okay, so that's a little bit who the Bhagavatam is talking about right now. And so let's turn to text number 2 in chapter 16 of the fourth canto, Praise of King Prithu by the Professional Reciters. So another aspect of speech is to recite the Vedas daily. So when you're doing these verses and everything like that, you're performing austerity of speech, and it's also purifying activity using the speaking power. So we'll try to do that ourselves when we chant the Sanskrit. We don't always get it right, but we'll try. Okay. Nalam vayam te mahimanu varnane.
Nalam vayam te mahimanu varnane.
Yo deva varyo vatatara mayaya. Venanga jatasya cha parushanite. Vachaspatinam api babrurmurdiya. Others want to chant?
Nalam vayam te mahimanu vartane.
Nalam vayam te mahimanu vartane.
Yodeva varyo vatatara mayaya.
Yodeva varyo vatatara mayaya.
Venam jatasya parushanite. Vachaspatinam api babrumurdhiya. Venangatasya cha paurasanite. Vachaspatinam api babramurdhiya. Anyone else, ladies? Okay, word for word. Na alam, not able. Vayam, we. Te, your. Mahima. Glories, anuvarnane, in describing, ya, you who, deva, the personality of Godhead, varya, foremost, avatara, no, avatatara, descended, mayaya, by his internal potencies or causeless mercy. Vena Anga, from the body of King Vena, Jatasa, who have appeared, Cha, and Purushani, glorious activities, Te, of you, Vachapatinam, of great orators, Api, although, Babramu became bewildered. Diya, the minds. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. The reciters continued, Dear King, you are a direct incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Vishnu, and by his causeless mercy you have descended on this earth. Therefore, it is not possible for us to actually glorify your exalted activities. Although you have appeared through the body of King Vena, even great orators and speakers like Lord Brahma and other demigods cannot exactly describe the glorious activities of your lordship. So, you want to start reading?
In this verse, the word Mayaya means by your causeless mercy. The Mayavadi philosophers explain the word Maya as meaning illusion or falseness. However, there is another meaning of Maya, that is causeless mercy. There are two kinds of Maya, Yog Maya and Mahamaya. Mahamaya is an expansion of Yog Maya, and both these Mayas are different expressions of the Lord's internal potencies. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, the Lord appears through his internal potencies, Atma Maya. We should therefore reject the Mayavad explanation that the Lord appears in a body given by the external potency of the material energy. The Lord and his incarnations are fully independent and can appear anywhere and everywhere by virtue of the internal potency. Although born out of the so-called dead body of the King Vena, King Prithu was still an incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead by the Lord's internal potency.
The Lord can appear in any family. Sometimes he appears as a fish incarnation or a boar incarnation. Thus the Lord is completely free and independent to appear anywhere and everywhere by his internal potency. It is stated that Ananta, an incarnation of the Lord who has unlimited mouths, cannot reach the end of his glorification of the Lord, although Ananta has been describing the Lord since time immemorial. So what to speak of demigods like Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, and others? It is said that the Lord is Shiva, Virninchi, Nitam, always worshipped by demigods like Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma. If the demigods cannot find adequate language to express the glories of the Lord, then what to speak of others? Consequently, reciters like the Sutta and Magadha felt inadequate to speak about King Prithu.
By glorifying the Lord with exalted verses, one becomes purified. Although we are unable to offer prayers to the Lord in the adequate fashion or duty, our duty is to make that attempt in order to purify ourselves. It is not that we should stop our glorification because demigods like Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva cannot adequately glorify the Lord. Rather, as stated by Prahlad Maharaj, everyone should glorify the Lord according to his own ability. If we are serious and sincere devotees, the Lord will give us the intelligence to offer prayers properly.
Okay, thank you. This last part of the purport, starting with the description there where it talks about the suttas and the magadhas, they felt inadequate to speak about the Lord. Earlier we were talking about speech, how it's important, and as devotees of the Lord, we are instructed here that we should also try to glorify the Lord according to our own capability. There's one very famous example of this in Srila Prabhupada's pastimes when it involves Malati's little daughter. Her name is Saraswati. They were in India in the beginning of the movement, first devotees going to India, and this girl was maybe less than 2 years old. But she could speak somehow or another, and she would go up to people and ask them, "Do you know who is Krishna?" And people would obviously be amused, a small girl coming up like that, especially Western girl in India at that time. And she would say, "He is Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead." She would preach like that, and Prabhupada was very satisfied. She was preaching according to her realization, according to her abilities. And so we should do that also. And quite often, probably not enough, certainly in my case not enough, whenever devotees have the opportunity to give some talk or lead some discussion on Krishna, they offer their obeisances to their Guru Maharaj. And often they request the devotees, assemble devotees, to please bless them so that they'll be able to speak something useful about Krishna. And so this is the attitude, this is the manner in which we approach discussions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And we can learn that here. Lord Shiva, Lord Brahma, they felt inadequate to describe, yet they went ahead. It's not a symptom of pride. It's not a symptom of pride, but it's out of duty for one's self-purification that we speak about the Supreme Personality of Godhead and describe his pastimes. And by doing so, we perform austerity like that, and we purify ourselves so that that harsh speech won't be there, ready to jump off our tongue every time we're provoked just a little bit. And this material energy is very expert at provoking us. So, Oma Gyana Timarandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshuran Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namah. So in the purport here, Srila Prabhupada begins by discussing the Mayavadis, which he often does. And then he discusses two kinds of Maya. And it's interesting, these two things, because what is the chief difference between us, the Vaishnavas, and the Mayavadis? Does anybody know? Huh? And personal realization, but what does that mean? I mean, what's the real distinction, Kalvin?
I mean that Krishna is Maya. Krishna is an illusory representation of the Brahman.
Right. Of the Brahman. Krishna is an illusory representation of Brahman, Kalakanda says, yes. And the difference between Krishna and the Brahman is what? But the Brahman emanates, it's a Brahman effulgence, it's the effulgence of Krishna. But what did you say? They're not different. Huh? No. What did you say? Krishna has form, but okay. The verse speaks about Maya. I think somebody said it. It's about Maya. Who said about Maya here? You said Maya, right? Yeah, the difference, one of the major differences between the impersonalist and the personalist is that the devotees accept that the Lord has Maya or different types of potencies. Different types of potencies. Let's call them different types of potencies. And so what's being described here is that the Mayavadi philosophers explain the word Maya meaning illusion or falseness. However, there is another meaning of Maya, and that is causeless mercy. There are two kinds of Maya, Yoga Maya and Mahamaya. And so Maya in this sense means the different potencies or energies of the Lord. As Vaishnavas, we accept that the Lord has unlimited potencies. Whereas the Mayavadis, they have this conception of Brahman where there's no differentiation. Maya can also mean like differentiation or different types of energies. The Mayavadis don't accept that the Supreme Absolute Truth has variety in the form of Maya. And so as Vaishnavas, we accept that the Lord has multipotencies, and these are just two of them that are mentioned here, Yoga Maya and Mahamaya. Because the Lord has different potencies, we find instruction in Bhagavad Gita about those potencies and what we're supposed to do in relation to them. The most direct verse here, although there are many, is found in the 7th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, text number 14, where Krishna says, yes, Daivihi esha gunamayi mama maya durachaya. Mayam etam taranti te. So there are a couple of very important concepts in this verse. Mama maya dharatyaya. What does it mean? Difficult to overcome. Yes. We're talking about Mahamaya. or the energy of the Lord, the illusory energy of the Lord that rules this material existence, Mahamaya. That's bewildering everyone. And Krishna is saying that that Maya of mine, that Mahamaya, that has that bewildering, deluding potency, is Duratyaya, very difficult to overcome. And so what does that mean, really? I mean, in practical life, what does it mean? That the Lord's potency is difficult to overcome. Balava Sankaras? Why don't we use the mic?
Unless someone who's above or not affected by the material energy, there's no zero possibility for us to ever be able to overcome the material energy.
Okay, and so
insurmountable is the word Prabhupada uses.
Okay, so what does overcoming the material energy mean? I mean, say the average man on the street, we stop somebody walking by here and tell them, you know, you can't overcome the potency of the Lord. I mean, what does that mean to them? Huh? Controlling the senses? Forgetfulness of our original nature. But I mean, in terms of for the practical man that walks there. Yeah.
We have to die, we have to become oldies.
Yeah, we have to die, we have to become oldies. We have to die. We have to become diseased. It means that, you know, I'm going to be frustrated when I walk on the campus over there and try to do something and I can't do it, right? I mean, practically speaking, that every little day, the frustrations or difficulties that we have, these are all influences of Mahamaya. Because ultimately, we are not subject to the miseries in this material world. We're just not. But we accept that we are because we are controlled by this illusory energy of the Lord, and we have to suffer threefold miseries. Threefold miseries, and then there's four kinds of living entities that bother us. It's just a mess here in this material world. So what does Krishna say, advise us in terms of how we should relate to that energy? Right. He tells us, Mama Maya Dharatya, but ye mam eva ye prapadyante mayam etam taranti te. If we surrender to Krishna, then we're not subject to that Mahamaya and all the different troubles that it causes. We're not subject to that. And so Krishna's indicating here some things that first of all, by saying that mayam mam eva ye prapadyante mayam etam tarantite, he's saying that we have a relationship with him, and that relationship is through different energies of the Lord. The relationship that most people have in this material world is through this material, through Mahamaya, and they have to suffer. But if we change the nature of our relationship with him, if we change the nature of our relationship with him, then we won't have to suffer Mahamaya. Yes? Right, in the ninth chapter, refers to another type of energy. What is it again? Say, Mahatmanastamam Partam, Daivi Prakritim Asrita, right? So he's describing another energy of his. So that those are two energies already, right there, we're seeing. You know, and the Mahatmas are great souls. Those are ones who have prabhajante, they've surrendered. And therefore, it's not that they become somehow or another free or not connected to Krishna when they get out of the Mahamaya, but they're connected to Krishna in another way, which is described in today's purport as being what? Yogamaya. Yogamaya. So Mahamaya is a connection with the Lord. We shouldn't think that Mahamaya means that we're somehow or another separate from the Lord. It's a connection with the Lord. But it's a connection I don't say it's illusory because it's not illusory. Indirect. Okay, that's a good way to say it. Balabhasin says indirect. It's indirect. inferior. It's an inferior relationship with the Lord. Yeah, well, these are good. Separate, yeah, but that indicates there's no relationship, and we're trying to get the concept that there is a relationship. So these are inferior. Yes? I'm going to get the mic here, so let's get the Prabhupada's example. I thought it was on.
Hare Krishna?
Yeah, okay.
Sorry. I like one example a lot that Prabhupada would give. He'd be giving a lecture in the microphone, and he'd say, so at some point, I will not be there, but this recording will exist. And so this is my separated energy.
Okay.
The recording. Right. So the material energy is kind of like that. It's Krishna's energy, but it's separated, just like a recording.
Right, that's good. But we have a connection with that recording, so we do maintain a connection with the separate energy of the Lord, too. That's good. Yes.
In my understanding, actually, we really don't have to differentiate in terms of Yogamaya and Mahamaya. This microphone can be under Yogamaya's jurisdiction, if it's used by a devotee. It can be under Mahamaya's jurisdiction if it's being used by a non-devotee.
Very good. That's a very interesting understanding. And this is taught by Rupa Goswami, follows the Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that even this material energy, this separated material energy, if it is used properly, it can also be Yogamaya instead of Mahamaya. It's not just the material elements that are separate and have no connection with Krishna. If they're engaged in Krishna's service, then they're just as good as the Yogamaya. So, yeah, there's not just the material elements means that it's Mahamaya, and there's no way that that can be connected to Krishna. So that's good as well. So the way to do this, the way to change the energy is by surrendering. Now, surrendering, it gives a certain connotation, but I would like to propose to you that maybe there's a different way we can understand what this prapadyante means instead of surrender. I mean, surrender kind of has like a negative connotation, doesn't it? I mean, you know, I have to give up, you know, I'm defeated, things like that. But if we look at it in terms of accepting our relationship with Krishna, if we look in terms of accepting our relationship, Mahamaya is very strong and it's difficult to overcome. It causes me miseries. But if I accept my relationship with Krishna, then Maya's influence on me is not so strong. Then it starts changing to Yogamaya, or the energy of the Lord which connects me in His service. And so if we think of it like that, of a relationship with the Lord, then, you know, it may give us some insight into what it means because we actually, when we do that, we affect Krishna. We affect Krishna because ultimately, Prabhupada describes in a purport to the ninth chapter, text 29 of Bhagavad Gita, in a purport, he says that Krishna consciousness, the very phrase Krishna consciousness suggests that those who are in such consciousness are living transcendentalists situated in Him. The Lord here distinctly he says, mayate, they are in me. Naturally, as a result, the Lord is also in them. This is reciprocal. This also explains the words, yayatam mam prapadyante tamsatayo bhajami aham. Whoever surrenders unto me, proportionately I take care of him. This transcendental reciprocation exists between both the Lord and the devotees because both the Lord and the devotees are conscious. Because the Lord and devotees are conscious. If we take this propugnante to be that I accept a relationship, it indicates that I'm accepting a relationship with a conscious being. Krishna is conscious being, I'm a conscious being. And by accepting that we have a relationship, then there's some reciprocation between the two of us. And this reciprocation is actually characteristic of our eternal relationship with Krishna. Therefore, that prapajyante, as they surrender unto me, means that Krishna will reciprocate with me in a different way. He's reciprocating with me under Mahamaya in a certain way. But if I accept my relationship with him, then his reciprocation will be in Yogamaya. And Yogamaya means what? Internal potency, but how? Directly, yes. Directly, not separated. And also in a loving relationship. In a loving relationship. Actually, if we go to that verse, this verse in Bhagavad Gita, Yayatam mam prapajyante tam satavi bhajami aham, Krishna, Prabhupada describes in a purport there how Krishna reciprocates in the five different types of rasas with his devotees there. I mean, generally we think of that verse in terms of this material energy, how I surrender, if you surrender to me, I reward them according to you. And others, if I worship you, I go to the heavenly planets or something like that, some material kind of a circumstance. But Prabhupada actually explains it in terms of our eternal relationship with Krishna, our eternal rasa with Krishna. That as we surrender to him, then we get a certain type of loving relationship with him. So that's the real characteristic of Yogamaya, is this kind of a loving relationship with Krishna. Yes.
Yoga means to connect back. So yoga, maya, as a word, makes some sense that to connect back to Krishna in a loving relationship. Is there a similar meaning for Mahamaya, the word Mahamaya?
Well, Mahamaya, I think the Maha indicates very difficult or insurmountable, as Vallabha Sen used the word, insurmountable energy. It's very great, and when you add Duratya, as the verse says in Bhagavad Gita, you really get the concept of, you know, being overwhelmed by that. Whereas Yogamaya, it takes even the smallest type of loving expression that we have and magnifies it. It magnifies it. Krishna, the common statement among devotees is that if you take one step towards Krishna, he'll take 10 steps towards you. And so Krishna, he's also known as Bhava Grahi Janardana. He takes just the essence of what you're doing. And we know in worshiping Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, for instance, that there's no offense. In the deity worship, for instance, deity worship involves a lot of things that where we could become offensive to the deity. But when we worship Gaur Nitai, there are no offenses. So this is great mercy. So the Lord magnifies it. And so that's the concept we get with Yogamaya, that whatever little thing we do becomes magnified in terms of developing our loving relationship with Krishna. That's really significant about Yogamaya. Yes? Hold on.
We're talking about Krishna reciprocates according to how we surrender. So let's say if I don't, I'm not accepting Krishna, you know, I'm not taking his shelter. So Krishna reciprocates accordingly. So if I'm not loving Krishna, it doesn't make sense that Krishna doesn't love me. How does he reciprocate? Does he stop loving me if I'm not loving him?
The nature of Krishna is also described in understanding Yogamaya and Mahamaya. Krishna is always reciprocating with his parts and parcels. That's his nature, and he doesn't give up his nature, even when we turn away from him. His nature as a conscious being is always to reciprocate. But If we don't want that reciprocation, then we are covered by the illusory potency of Mahamaya, and we think that we have no relationship with him. We think that he's not reciprocating with us, when in actuality he is. Why does this material world exist? Why does this material world exist? Who can say? Yeah, this material world exists because we want to be separate from Krishna. Not that, you know, he wants to have a place that's very hellish. You know, he doesn't want to have that. But because we want it, he's reciprocating with us. He creates this world for us to be separate from him. And so that's the Lord's mercy to the people that even want to turn against him. That's how he's maintaining us. He maintains that relationship with us by creating this material world. So whatever we want, Krishna will reciprocate with us. And to the degree which we love him, the degree which we accept our relationship or surrender to him, then we get different types of relationships with him. So actually everything can be analyzed in terms of how we surrender to Krishna. Every circumstance we have in life, even here. I mean, we're here living in the Krishna house, serving Krishna here, because that's exactly what we conceive of our relationship with Krishna being. When we start conceiving of our relationship with Krishna being, a cowherd boy in the spiritual world, then we will be a cowherd boy in the spiritual world. It depends upon us. Whatever we want, Krishna is ready to give. Yes. No, we were present before the creation of this material manifest universe, yes. The living entity is eternal, and our existence goes beyond just the temporary manifestation of this material universe. Definitely. Definitely. We're eternal. That's what it means. We didn't come into existence when this universe was created. Neither will we be annihilated when this universe is annihilated. The Lord is called Narayan. Why is the Lord called Narayan? Yes, he's a shelter of all living entities. When this cosmic manifestation is wound up, where do we go? Where are we? We're in Narayan. We're resting there. That's the eternal blessing. So we're eternal. Existed before Brahma, yes. Before Brahma. Yes. Yes, he's also living entities, also eternal. So we're not necessarily before Brahma. We're all living entities, yeah. Yes.
So there are two energies, Yogamaya and Mahamaya. And those who are in this material world, they are primarily in the Mahamaya. And those who are in the spiritual world, Vaikuntha planet and the Golok Vrindavan, they are in the Yogamaya. So where are those who are in the truly Brahman realized, like Kumaras were before they became devotees? So there, I mean, Mayavadi is a deviation of that true Brahmavadis. So which energy they are under?
Well, someone who has this impersonal understanding of the Lord, when they become perfected in that, they go to the Brahman effulgence of the Lord, and they remain there. So they're there also based on their desire. Their desire is to annihilate personality, also to annihilate all the miseries in this material world, to give up this material world and the material energy completely. And they have a conception of the spiritual existence as being devoid of any varieties. So Krishna has a place for them also, and they're in the Brahmajyoti. But the problem is that that's also illusion. They can't stay there, and then they come back. They come back to this material world.
Sometimes it seems that serving Krishna is very difficult. So why is that? I mean, if it is our if we are accepting our relationship with Krishna, then why it seems that it's very difficult?
Well, how serious are we about accepting our relationship with Krishna? That's the problem. we're not serious. It's not that Krishna is not ready. It's that we're not serious. We have some other motives, some other desires we have to overcome. Or we just have to be patient. What is described by Rupa Goswami in Upadeshamrita? In the first... Utsaha nischaya daryat tat tat karma punartya. So we have to endeavor with enthusiasm and patience. So that means that if it's hard, we have to be determined, and we have to be remain enthusiastic, and we have to be patient to wait for the mercy of the Lord. Because we cannot demand the mercy of the Lord. That's part of what it means to surrender. Okay, I talked about accepting a relationship, trying to soften it. But what does it actually mean? It means what Prabhupada says it means, surrender. You have to be willing to accept whatever Krishna gives to you when he gives it to you, not that you can demand it or force it by your devotional service. And so therefore, we find Chaitanya Mahaprabhu begging for the mercy of the Lord, not saying I'm qualified and therefore I have to have it. In that regard, I want to just discuss very briefly the Damodar Leela, because we're going to be starting the month of Kartik this week. And the Damodar Leela has some very interesting lessons we can learn specifically about the energies of the Lord. Can anybody just describe very briefly the Damodar Leela? Anybody? Yeah. Go ahead, Nima.
One time very making a lot of problems for Mother Yashoda, so she became angry and she tied Krishna to one motor, and so when she was crying, the rope was two fingers short.
Mm-hmm.
So it is explained that the two fingers correspond to endeavor and mercy. And so she became she was in anxiety, and she asked for ropes from all of the neighborhoods, but still she couldn't tie. But when Krishna saw her endeavor, then he bestowed his mercy so that she could tie him to the motor.
Okay, good, very good, thank you. So let's look at that Leela and see what's actually going on there in terms of the different energies or potencies of the Lord. We talk about Maya, the Lord has many potencies, energies, and so many different energies are in action here. First, the fact that Krishna, he didn't want to be bound. Krishna has an energy called Sankalpa Shakti. Sankalpa Shakti. Which means he has his own desire. He has his own desire, what he wants to do. And so Krishna, he didn't want to be bound by the ropes of Mother Yashoda. Why? Does anyone know why? Well, he wanted to play with his friends, you know. He didn't want to be bound up, you know. He wanted to play with his friends. So his Sankalpa Shakti, you know, was saying, I don't want to be bound. And so, therefore, Mama Maya Adhiraja, this material nature can't be overcome. What to speak of, you know, in the spiritual world? If he has a desire, if Krishna, the Supreme Personality of God, has a desire, who can overcome it? Can Mother Yashoda overcome it? She couldn't tie him. Why? It's not that he expanded his body. He has that Shakti too. He could expand his body, but he didn't expand his body. And she actually was bringing more rope, but she wasn't able to bind him. Why? Because Krishna's Sankalpa Shakti. And this is explained by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. He had a desire. He didn't want to be bound, so he couldn't be bound. But there was some competition because Mother Yashoda also had desire. She desired what? She was in the Vatsalya Bhav, Vatsalya Rasa, with Krishna. And in that, she had a very strong desire to serve Krishna as a mother, right? And so what does she think as a mother in terms of Krishna? He's an adi boy. He has to be punished. Otherwise, how will he learn a lesson? She wasn't thinking, well, this is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You know, she was thinking, this is my son. He's naughty. He can't do this kind of thing. Therefore, he had to be punished. So she had a very strong desire. But that desire alone wasn't sufficient, as Nimai Pandit Prabhu told us. There were two things, right? There was the desire of Mother Yasoda, which is bhakti shakti, the devotees, the devotional energy and desire to serve Krishna in a particular way. That was there, but that wasn't enough just to bind Krishna. Something else had to happen. Krishna's mercy had to be there. Kripa shakti. This is another different energy of the Lord. Kripa shakti. And so, because Krishna saw that his devotee was endeavoring, his sankalpa shakti became defeated by his kripa shakti, and therefore, Mother Yasoda was able to bind him. So, if we look at this pastime, we see different energies of the Supreme Lord interacting and working. It's not that Krishna just said, I'm not going to have you bound me, and it's just a game or something like that. No, there's actual different energies of the Lord in competition here. But what does it tell us that the bhakti shakti of Mother Yasoda was able to overcome sankalpa shakti? What does that tell us about the energies of the Lord and the maya of the Lord? Yeah, it tells us that ultimately that Krishna is defeated by love. When we say he's defeated by love, we just don't mean, you know, we actually mean he was defeated. He had a desire that can't be denied and can't be overcome, his sankalpa shakti. But that was overcome by the desire of his devotee, by the love of his devotee. And so that energy is... That bhakti shakti is so strong that it defeats even Krishna. And that's something we can learn from this Damodar Leela.
In the material, we always have this idea that parents have the most amount of love for their children.
Mm-hmm.
So why is Mother Yashoda's love not greater than the love of gopis for Krishna?
He said, why is Mother Yasoda's love not greater than that of the gopis? Well, that's also discussed by our acharyas, and actually the rasas, starting from Santa, Dasya, Sakya, Vatsalya, Madhurya, they're compared to, we learn and we study the Srimad Bhagavatam about these material elements, earth, water, fire, air, and ether. Each of them contains them. So when we get to earth, it contains ether, air, water, everything. All the elements are contained there. So similarly in the rasas, the Madhurya rasa contains all the rasas. So it's more full in that regard. Whereas Vatsalya rasa doesn't contain all of them, particularly doesn't contain Madhurya. It contains all of them except Madhurya rasa. But the Madhurya rasa is characterized by the utmost surrender and the willingness to give up everything on the part of the gopis for Krishna. The gopis, when Krishna played his flute, they gave up everything. They gave up their families, they gave up their reputations in society, they gave up everything for Krishna. And they just went to Krishna without thinking. And so Krishna appreciated that. He appreciates that complete surrender without holding any conception back. Now, it's hard to say Mother Yasoda had some fault in this regard. Not that she had a fault, but it's just a fuller expression of complete surrender to Krishna. That's how we can understand it at this stage in our devotional service. Yes.
Just wanted to point out another beautiful detail of Damodar Leela, that Krishna was waiting for all the ropes from the village to come, because the ropes were used to bind the legs of cows while milking, so that would hurt his devotees' cows. So he wanted to free them also. So he was waiting, and then, I mean, that's I heard from Gaurangpurus.
That's also his mercy. His mercy is concern and care, which is another energy of the Lord.
Yes. It's regarding rasas. I mean, does it really matter which rasa is higher, which is lower? Because for every person, we all are individual. So it's depending on that.
You're absolutely correct. It doesn't matter. It's just a sort of a construct to help us understand that the gopis are the most surrendered devotees of Krishna. But it's not like someone that's in Vatsalya Rasa or Sakya Rasa is not satisfied, you know. Oh, I gotta be a gopi or something.
Bhishma Dev's prayers, Prabhupada mentioned that Bhishma Dev in Dasya Ras, but it's not different from the gopi's love for Krishna.
So these are all the different energies of the Lord, actually. You know, these different ways in which we relate, this is what that differentiates us from the Mayavadis, is that we have all these wonderful different energies of the Lord to interact with Him on, because He's a conscious being and we're a conscious being. Okay? So we'll end there. Grantara Srimad Bhagavatam. Thank you.